This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
An archaeologist has only one chance to excavate a site and do it right, because excavation is destruction. It may be reconstructed for future visitors, leaving behind perhaps a dump pile of dirt, scattered rocks, maybe some building stones, and hopefully the official report. The report is printed in a peer-reviewed scientific publication so other scholars can review and study the findings. But what if the archaeologists miss something? Something that would change their conclusions about the site? How would you know? You can't go back and do it over. The best you could do would be re-excavate the dump pile using newer methods, which is what archaeologist Scott Stripling did a couple of years ago.
In December 2019 and January 2020, we launched this project. The goal was to wet sift two dump piles from the 1980s, Mount Ebal and Shiloh, in order to determine if important small finds are missed using the current method of dry sifting only.
Scott Stripling is the director of the Archaeological Institute of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, and director of excavations for Associates for Biblical Research. In his excavations, he uses a process called wet sifting.
The matrix that is left over from the dry sifting is then poured down a funnel into a color-coded bag. That bag is then taken to the wet sifting area, where a volunteer, trained and under supervision, washes and checks it.
At a presentation to the November 2020 meeting of the Near East Archaeological Society, Stripling described the results of the wet sifting investigation to the dump piles at Mount Ebal. One item in particular, a curse tablet, connects with the description of Mount Ebal as the mountain of cursing in the book of Deuteronomy.
It's 3.2 by 2.9 by 0.6 centimeters, covered in dirt. It just looks like another sliver of rock. But once it's washed, then a trained eye is able to pick up something of critical importance, which may help us understand Mount Ebal in a new and enlightened way.
At Tel Shiloh, there were similar successes to report.
Finkelstein, from his 1980s excavation at Shiloh, published five scarabs. We have recovered five more from his dump piles. You can imagine what these could have meant if they were recovered in a stratigraphic context using wet sifting in the field as an aid to dating the various strata.
Stripling believes he proved an important point with his dump pile excavations.
Critical data can be extracted from dump piles from previous excavations. In-field wet sifting enables excavators to determine the context of small finds. The dump piles from the past contain a tremendous amount of material.
Earlier this year, I paged through back issues of Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine, and discovered that up until 2005, the Artifacts News Digest contained very little information about the discovery of seals and clay seal impressions, often called bullae. But after 2005, there were stories almost every year about seals or bullae being discovered, often containing the names of people we know from the Bible. Seals and bullae go back for thousands of years. Seals were used in ancient times to identify and secure correspondence and commerce. Archaeologists have been studying them for over a century. But what accounts for their sudden recent prominence in the last 15 years? It turns out it involves wet sifting. Israeli archaeologist Gabby Barkai is co-director of the Temple Mount Sifting Project.
The Temple Mount is the most important archaeological site in Israel. Jerusalem, which is the most excavated place upon earth, does not have in its history any excavation that took place upon the Temple Mount.
Excavation within the Temple Mount is impossible unless you could somehow remove the dirt from the Temple Mount first, which is what happened several decades ago when the Muslim authorities in charge of the Temple Mount opened up an emergency exit as they were creating an underground mosque amongst the support pillars that hold up the Temple Mount platform.
They removed from there approximately 9,000 tons of earth.
Those 9,000 tons of earth were hauled out of the Temple Mount and dumped unceremoniously into the nearby Kidron Valley, where they sat for several years, until it came to the attention of Gabby Barkai through his student, Zaki DeVira. And they decided to excavate that dirt. They didn't want to take a chance of missing any single clue held in that Temple Mount dirt. They were aware that wet sifting had been used in some excavations of prehistoric sites and began to consider it. In 2004, they began wet sifting.
So we have a large number of finds, approximately 500,000 finds. Those finds are very significant and sometimes even changing our concept of the history of different periods in the long historical story of the Temple Mount. Even if the material lost, let us say for an exaggeration, lost 90% of its scientific value because it is jungled up and because it is all messed up, then we have 10% left, and 10% is much, much more than 0%.
Over the past 17 years, hundreds of thousands of volunteers, ordinary people working with Zaki DeVira and Gabby Barkai on the Temple Mount Sifting Project, have washed up artifacts from the Temple Mount dirt representing every era of human history, from Stone Age to modern. Then, other archaeologists, such as Eilat Bazar, working in nearby areas of Jerusalem, also started sending their excavated dirt to be wet sifted. And that's when it got really interesting. Eilat Bazar passed away earlier this year, but when I interviewed her a decade ago, she mentioned these discoveries as two examples of why biblical archaeology is so exciting and so important.
In my excavations at the summit of the City of David, we found two bullae, you know, these small seal impressions on clay. Two of them contained names that are written in the book of Jeremiah, names of ministers that described to be at the Zedekiah, the King Zedekiah court. These people are mentioned in the Bible, and suddenly we are revealing their seal impressions with their names. This is a very accurate pinpoint. Like, really, you cannot prove more than that. It exists. These people exist.
Eilat Bazar's excavation in the City of David area, the oldest part of Jerusalem, found the seal of Jehuchel, the son of Shelemiah, in 2005. 3 years later, the name of Gedaliah, son of Pashur, was found. Two officials mentioned in Jeremiah 38, responsible for imprisoning the prophet Jeremiah in a cistern. These bullae came from dirt excavated near the Temple Mount and sent to the Temple Mount Sifting Project for processing. Since that interview, even more exciting bullae of Hezekiah, king of Judah, and Isaiah, perhaps Isaiah the prophet, were found in Eilat Bazar's excavations. These tiny seal impressions, hardly bigger than a fingernail, give us a physical connection to people we read about in the Bible. But aside from that, are these tiny artifacts all that important? Robert Deutsch thinks small finds like these are critical.
There are about a corpus of 2,500 seals and seal impressions. Compare that to other inscriptions found, like on jars or on the shells or on ostraca, were numbered by tens, not by hundreds and not by thousands. So the corpus of seals and seal impressions are the largest by far of what we can recover from the Iron Age, from the time of the first temple. That's why they are so important.
Just going by the numbers, Robert Deutsch says seals and seal impressions provide important information about ancient Israel in the biblical period. Any archaeologist working in Israel should make their recovery a priority.
Any archaeologist, when he's going to excavate anywhere, is looking for inscriptions. In Mesopotamia, it's very rare to find something which is not inscribed. In Israel, it's the opposite. It's very rare to find something which is inscribed. And if it's inscribed, you will find it with hieroglyphs or with cuneiforms, not for it with ancient Hebrew. The ancient Hebrew is very, very scarce.
Robert Deutsch says seals and seal impressions are the best source of finding ancient Hebrew inscriptions, but they're also very difficult to find without extra care. as Scott Stripling discovered when he wet-sifted the dump piles of Mount Ebal and Tel Shiloh. Stripling said he would like the Israel Antiquities Authority to mandate wet-sifting.
I believe that excavation licenses should not be issued to digs who refuse to wet-sift their material. We simply do not get a second bite at the apple. As an archaeologist, we only get one opportunity, and if that means slowing down, then we must slow down in order to be more thorough. Wet sifting holds the potential to revolutionize what we're finding from archaeological sites and to narrow the gap of uncertainty of what was actually there in ancient times.
Scott Stripling is calling for a revolution in biblical archaeology. Mississippi State University archaeologist Jimmy Harden is co-director of excavations at Kerbet Sumaili and says it sounds like a good idea.
I'll tell you what, the payoff could be a very positive thing. Once you excavate this stuff, it's gone, as you well know from participating in excavations. So I think there's an ethical responsibility to collect as much data as you can. I think it's a great idea at some levels. The logistics of it would be another thing.
And it turns out the logistics of wet sifting can be a problem. University of North Carolina archaeologist Jody Magnus is co-director of excavations at Hukok.
Wet sifting is great because it retrieves these kinds of teeny little artifacts like you're describing that you wouldn't necessarily find otherwise, but it absorbs a huge amount of resources. And so you need to have a lot of funding and manpower and equipment to be able to do that. And it's not necessarily always something that is worthwhile depending on what you're digging through. So it depends on the context.
Jody Magnus is not wet sifting, but she is very carefully dry sifting the area above the floor of the synagogue where she's excavating, even though it takes a lot of extra time, because she doesn't want to miss any clues that would help date the synagogue.
So it's a matter of how you're allocating your resources, and that's one of the things that archaeologists have to do in the field is decide what is the nature of the remains and what is the best way to retrieve the maximum amount of data. So that's what I would say, and I think that that's why you're seeing more wet sifting now, at least in certain contexts.
Wheaton College archaeologist Daniel Master, who excavates at Tel Shimron, says wet sifting is just one of the tools available, and choosing which tool depends on the research question they're engaging.
You know, we try to recover absolutely as much as we can. No excavation recovers everything. It may be in some cases that we would say what's happening here is so important that we need to use a series of sieves that are progressively finer and finer and finer so that we can find every single object. And we don't even want to expose this to water. It's too detailed, right? And so in that case, we'll do exactly that.
Daniel Master says in order to get anywhere, we've got to make some choices, then try to collect as much data as we can. Wet sifting is a tool that's beginning to help archaeologists working in Israel recover more information from their excavations that will help clarify our knowledge of the biblical world and interpret the Bible. Maybe it won't become mandatory for all archaeologists, but its value in the field has been proven. We're looking forward to seeing how it will be used in the years to come and the discoveries that will be made. I'm Gordon Govier. Tune in again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.